location where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
That is, provides transportation to the entire world.
But when we have a mishap from the test community, we find that test community is very small. And we're human. And it hurts. And our hearts, thoughts, prayers, absolutely with the families, the victims.
Hi, it's Friday, October 31st, 2014, Halloween. A time which we associate with pumpkins and trick-or-treating, and I've seen a bit of that tonight. But there's also been a very sad event over in the Americas, in the Mojave Desert, where the Virgin Galactic spacecraft has crashed with one death and one injury, a very bad injury, at the time of recording. So we don't know how that's going to transpire by the time you hear this. The Virgin Galactic is kind of a spacecraft. They call it a spacecraft. It kind of just goes outside the atmosphere that we would think of as being normal airspace, but it doesn't really go into space as such. It does a kind of arc. I think that's the idea. It goes just into space where it looks like space. You've got the curve of the Earth, you've got stars, you've got clouds and a blue curve of the Earth beneath you. So it looks like space, but it shouldn't be mistaken for space. It's really the very, very upper bit of the atmosphere. This is a plane, really. It's not really a true rocket or spacecraft. And unfortunately, there's a bit of confusion about these sort of subjects where it all seems so amazing and go ahead that it's easy to think, oh, yeah, Richard Branson's built a rocket that's going to go into space. Obviously the title Galactic is just a bit of fun, but about as accurate as the title Virgin, I suspect. But to be serious, you know, he's going with that kind of let's go for it aesthetic. They've got Apollo off the ground, Mercury off the ground, and you know, it goes right back to the 1950s with Dan Dare and stuff like that. In fact, I know Richard Branson is a fan of Dan Dare, and I think largely what he's trying to do with the Virgin Galactic is to kind of emulate that type of, you know, rocketry. I mean, Apollo obviously was a kind of government program to get things off the ground and go to the moon. But it was often thought that rocketry would be a private enterprise thing. There's a great film made in the 1950s, Destination Moon, written by Robert A. Heinlein, the famous science fiction author. And it showed a very private enterprise vision of space travel. They were going to plan this very complicated trip to the moon, and then suddenly they had to pull the whole schedule forward. And because these were kind of private enterprise guys, they could just kind of do it. The film features a very interesting, well, very entertaining, actually, cartoon showing how it can be done. It's very similar to the little cartoon in the film Jurassic Park, where they show how American know-how can clone dinosaurs, and you see how we can get to the moon if we just all pull together with American know-how. And but in that film, and in Robert A. Heinlein's quite right-wing science fiction thinking, it was very much a private enterprise thing that we would get into space. So it was a bit of a surprise in a way when it was Apollo that did it, which is actually a military organisation. But Apollo's had its problems this week too. Of course, the rocket that was meant to go up to the International Space Station a few days ago, that misfired and blew up on the launch pad. Luckily, it was an unmanned vehicle. But in fact, it was itself only really a replacement for the shuttle, which was really meant to do those kind of missions and was meant to be a space truck and had already failed, really. I remember vividly back in 1986 coming home from a job I had at the time in a local printing plant and seeing on TV, it was John Craven's News Round, in fact, seeing this horrifying picture of the shuttle breaking up and the story of the Challenger, I think it was, being destroyed, and I actually kept the whole newspaper from the era I've got somewhere with that story in. And of course there was another shuttle disaster quite a long time later on, I think 10 or so years later on. And the shuttle had a lot of problems, of course, with the re-entry tiles Mainly that was the main problem of the vehicle. It was a very good vehicle, but mainly the re-entry tiles were a problem, and these used to fall off, and that caused, I think, the second disaster where it burnt up. But the first time round, it was a ring, I think, on one of the boosters that came loose in some way. But the whole thing was just on the edge of possibility, really, and that's the trouble. With the private enterprise stuff, if you stick a fancy logo on it, like Virgin Galactic, it seems, wow, it's branded. You know Richard Branson's going to give you a good service. You know, he's got other outfits going, like the communications and the airline, and of course the music. Originally, the mega stores and the record label started with Omadorn, I think it was. No, Tubular Bells, in fact, by Mike Oldfield in the early 70s, the first record they put out. And it all started with one shop, in fact, just called Virgin Records. So he's built it up, and all credit to him for that. But it's easy to think that because he can stick a brand on everything he wants, that somehow it's going to be a success and it's going to be flaw-free. You know, it can't go wrong. But of course, like anything else, it can go wrong. And going up into space is a very, very perilous business. I mean, even with the shuttle, it had billions of pounds or dollars to develop. We know we had the two terrible fatalities. And in Apollo, although the so-called moon landings, and we won't go there now on whether they were real or not, but before the successful, in inverted commas, landing on the moon, there had been a disaster with Guy Grissom dying in an oxygen fire in the capsule. It has been speculated that Guy Grissom had raised doubts about the Apollo hardware, that it was very dangerous and wouldn't do the job, and then he dies in a fire on the launch pad. Subsequent missions all go according to plan. Well, draw your own conclusion there. But I read in a newspaper article, I think I cut it out and I've got it around somewhere, it's a double page spread. It was in the Daily Mail or something like that. I can't reference it accurately. But it was an article about Virgin Galactic, published quite recently, saying there were doubts about whether this could be done. Some of the staff had quit the organisation and seemed to be saying that it couldn't be done in the time frame that Richard Branson was saying, that the technology just wasn't there. What we have with Virgin Galactic is, it's not a rocket as such. It may have rocket engines, but it's not what we think of as a rocket. It's a plane, and it goes up high, and it launches the smaller craft from this sort of frame around the smaller craft. So it almost looks like a trimaran, and then the middle piece detaches, and the middle piece is like a smaller aircraft delta wing vehicle that's meant to go right up. But it just goes up to the top of, like I said, the top of where you can go on a plane, to the higher part of the atmosphere. We can just about keep a plane going, and so it can kind of come back down. I guess it will glide down, similar to the shuttle, but it doesn't have to have all the tiles that the shuttle has, which are what give it the heat shielding to re-enter the atmosphere. This is largely what the problem is with space travel. There's radiation outside the Van Allen belt, and that is a problem. But also a lot of the difficulties are to do with re-entry. And if you come back from the moon, for example, and the trajectory that they were meant to be going at in Apollo, when they reach the Earth's atmosphere, they're going so fast that they need an extremely thick heat shield to protect them. And that's been possibly stated as an objection to the veracity of the Apollo story. With the shuttle, we know it's real. I know the International Space Station is real. I've seen it go overhead. It's a little golden dot you can spot if you know where to look when it comes over. So we know shuttles come down. We've seen them land. But they need this heat shielding, not as badly as Apollo did, because it was coming in from much further out and through much more atmosphere. The shuttle really just goes above the atmosphere, but it's not going through so much. I guess it's not coming so fast, basically. And what they do, they go to a very narrow angle, so they can kind of spread out the friction and kind of come in a long, long way through the atmosphere. And it kind of means you're not coming in so sharp. But the Apollo vehicles, I believe, came down much more vertically. They certainly came in from a much further distance, and they had to have much better heat shield. And it has been said that they can't actually match that heat shield now. There was a very good article in Nexus, not the current issue, but the one before that. I think it would be the August-September 2014 issue, talking about this, where it said that NASA can't actually replicate the heat shield. They supposedly had that then, which makes it rather strange that they can't then easily go back into space and come back from being a long way away. So tonight, it is an absolute tragedy. You know, I'm not trivialising this or trying to be clever about it. It's awful. I was just in a pub down the road here, and I was about to go out, and I just glimpsed on the screen what looked like some sort of crashed aircraft. I just assumed it was a plane. Then I went up to look closer. The sound was turned down, but they had on it the subtitles, and it said, you know, Virgin Galactic crash. And you could see the sort of logos and stuff on it as you look carefully. It is a tragedy, but you see, I think Richard Branson, I think he's a good man in many ways, but I think he, I don't know if he believes the moon landings are real, but if he does, he probably thinks it's all much easier to do than it really is. And sadly, it's very, very hard to go into space. Even NASA found that, and that's why I haven't really got back into manned space travel. And the Russians do it in a more clunky way, but I think they kind of understand it's a hard, hard thing to do. And we don't know so much about what they go through, but there have been some very interesting stories, again in Nexus magazine, which we don't advertise, but I do recommend recently, talking about the experiences of the Russians in space and how they had hallucinations and stuff when they're in orbit on the space station. And, you know, it's a very strange place to be once you're right out in even kind of low Earth orbit, but beyond where Virgin Galactic would go. But still not really proper interstellar or interplanetary space, which is really beyond the Van Allen belts, which, if you believe the Apollo moon landings being fake theory, we've never been to. Or at least if we have been there, it's been a kamikaze mission. Or it possibly has been covert, done with technology which has not been publicised, which is quite possible but can't be proven and is purely hearsay. Yeah, so it's quite a shocking tale overall. And what was also bizarre in a way, watching this on the TV just now in the pub I was in, the film Interstellar is coming out very, very soon, a Christopher Nolan film. I admire guardedly Christopher Nolan's films. I think he's a bit humourless as a director, but I think he's technically very good. He's got a lot of integrity, particularly when it comes to using in-camera effects and 35mm film and stuff like that. And apparently did a lot of this with practical effects, and the shots I saw on the screen just now were very, 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 very good. And what's interesting is the scenario, which seems to be in the future, Earth has technologically receded into being an agrarian society to a large degree, and NASA is a kind of semi-covert, secretive organisation, a slightly underground organisation that's no longer at its best, and that could be said to be true now, really. And what seems to be happening in the film is that they have to get off the planet, and so they develop, though they still have some sort of rocketry so they can get into orbit, but they have a mission that they plan to go into deep space, or interstellar space really, which is even further out than the solar system, using a wormhole. And you probably would need something like that if you were going to go into interstellar space with the technology we have now, or that's emitted, which is chemical rockets. You couldn't go into interstellar space with that. If you did, you'd take thousands of years to get where you wanted to go. So if you had some way of getting up there, and then you could go to the wormhole, you could presumably shoot off to where you've got to go, and maybe you could come back, I don't know. So we'll have to wait and see what that film shows us. I think it's going to be quite a good film. What's interesting too is that they've also got virtual reality simulators already, giving a kind of version of what it's like to be on the spacecraft, that are also shown on the TV this evening. And again, it all suggests that it's easy to do and we can actually make these things. I think if NASA put the money in, they can make better vehicles. I think the shuttle was a fantastic vehicle at the time. It was a great idea to reuse the actual shuttle craft. But I think the idea of the external booster rockets were always a bit of a problem. A lot of wastage there, jettisoning them off. With Virgin Galactic, what Richard Branson did was, I think, take some of the ideas that the earlier version of the shuttle did have in the mid-70s to the late 70s, when they did a lot of tests where the shuttle sat on top of a Boeing 747 and it went as high as it went, as high as it could go, and then it would just release the shuttle and it would already be quite high in those tests, it would glide back down to Earth. But you could fire up the rockets on it, I guess, and just carry on straight up. And if you got out of the really thick atmosphere of the lower atmosphere and were already quite in thin air, the gravity's the same, but if you're in thin air, you've got less resistance, and then you launch the shuttle, I think you do better than starting the whole thing off from the ground. So this kind of piggybacking approach seems a very good idea. And it was what I think NASA should have developed and were going to develop, but they went the route of doing the booster rockets and a great big tank of fuel that was in the middle of the shuttle with the two boosters to each side. But again, the boosters, I think, could be reused. The great big tank was completely redundant after each mission. It just burnt up, I think, which is a hell of a waste, again, of materials. So it's not really a fully reusable craft. What you really want is something that just takes off from a runway and lands on a runway. And I think that's something we will eventually get. I think what Richard Branson was trying to do is come up with something that was between the two. He was trying to do something much better than the plane. It's a bit like a U-2 spy plane, something like that. They can go very, very high up. And it gives you the effect of being in space, because if you look out the window, it'll look like space. You'll see the curve of the Earth, it'll be blue beneath you, you'll see black above you, and it'll be stars. But what you really are is just so high above the atmosphere that the atmosphere is so thin that what you're really seeing is night, effectively, above you. You're not really in space, and you certainly haven't escaped the actual orbital... you haven't escaped all the gravity of Earth, but you're not truly in orbit. And even if you're in orbit, you then want to get out into deep space. That's a slightly different deal altogether, because then you've got to get beyond the Van Allen belts, which are radioactive. So you've got that problem as well. But you're into something that looks like space. It's a bit like if you go into Kew Gardens and get into a lot of plants and it looks like you're in the jungle, and you wouldn't really know the difference until you pull back. And perhaps it's a bit more than that, because you are actually very high. But it's not the same as being actually in space. It mustn't be confused. And I think there's perhaps a danger of believing that, because the will is there, that it is a spaceship. And it is not a spaceship. It's a very high altitude aircraft that Richard Branson was making. And it's a quite an attractive vehicle visually, perhaps a little complex in the design. That could be part of the problem. It seems to be that today, a problem with the new fuel being used has been what caused the problem, but we don't absolutely know. Just looking at the breaking news at the moment, it seems that this new fuel could have been part of the problem. The rocket had been tested on the ground prior to the launch and worked okay, presumably with this new fuel. One pilot ejected, but was badly injured. The other, it appears, was not able to eject and was killed. We don't know any more about that at the moment. You may know more by the time you hear this. The information would like to give its condolences to the family of the pilot who died, and we wish the co-pilot well, and hopefully he will get over this and recover. But obviously you may know more by the time you hear this. But it is a tragedy. I'm sure Richard Branson will carry on, but I hope he will also heed the warnings perhaps that he's been given by some of his staff who have quit the programme, saying it was not really quite viable with what he was trying to do. I don't think there was anything malicious or arrogant there. I think it may just be that we've been sold the myth of space travel so much that it seems easy. It's not easy at all, and even NASA can't do it very easily. Even if the shuttle had worked brilliantly, it was always very risky. It was going to go wrong. It was going to go wrong a few times out of every 100 launches. There were going to be fatalities. You were never going to make it a fixed system. And unfortunately, it proved to be not as reliable even as that. Once they had a lot of the problems happen, they really grounded the vehicle. And as I said, the unmanned rocket the other day, the supply rocket to the International Space Station, that blew up, and that had nobody on board. It didn't have to have any great engineering to make it ultra safe. And we've got to get this technology, but I think we've got to look at different ways of doing it. Maybe the anti-gravity and these various other technologies that are beyond this episode's remit to talk about. But perhaps I'll leave you with a quote from Arthur C. Clarke from the Information Magazine, number 1, 1997, believe it or not. And this quote is very good, actually, because it does sum up something. And we will do a fuller episode or two about the moon landings and stuff, and I'll include this again in that, but I'll read it out for now. Arthur C. Clarke said, back in the 1950s, the public has therefore been prepared for the conquest of space as it was never prepared for the conquest of the air. I sometimes think that the indoctrination has been a little too thorough. When the year 1975 comes up and the moon still seems an awful long way off, a lot of people are going to be somewhat disappointed, and the rocket engineers will be accused in no uncertain terms. Beat. There is some danger that space travel may be oversold because scientific progress happens so much more easily in fiction than it does in real life.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.